Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Erev Yud Zayin, Ba'Adar Beis, Parashas Tzav, Tafshin Pei Dalas, 5784, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, March 26, 2024. You're listening to Phantom Nation, a.k.a. the program, coming to you from the simultaneously successful and failed secular Zionist state of Israel, successful in bringing the land back to vibrant Jewish life, but a failure for not ending anti-Semitism, which the post-religious Zionists believe was the antidote to anti-Semitism, as they called it, which is really a stupid word, as stupid as it is dishonest. The word anti-Semitism implies that there's such a thing as Semitism, when there is not and has never been. The word was invented by post-Christians in the 19th century who could no longer hate Jews for killing God because they were post-Christians. They were most unhappy with the emancipation of the Jews bestowing on them citizenship, which allowed them to mingle in German society as never before, but which still made people uncomfortable in their presence. What the post-religionists did was to rebrand the Jews as no longer a nation scattered around the world in punishment for killing God, but a race, which is a biological condition. They were reconfigured as natives of Asia, and as Asiatics, they were alien to European culture, as alien as black Africans. People weren't comfortable in their presence. What the post-Christian Jew haters did was to pilfer a word from the academic study of philology, languages. The word was Semitic, the name given by philologists to Hebrew and cognate languages. An historical fact, there never was a people who called themselves Semites and were called that by others. The term anti-Semitism, when invented, probably in the decade of the 70s, the 1870s, it stood for resisting the influx of Jews into German-speaking lands, Austria, Germany, escaping pogroms in Russia. Okay. Their influx was resisted not because they were guilty of killing Jesus, the post-religionists didn't care about that, but for their alien culture, and the resistance had nothing to do with the gas chambers for them. The new term, said the anti-Semite, is that he has no problem with the Jewish religion. It's a racial thing, a cultural thing. In its birth decades, anti-Semitism was as dishonest as today's neologisms like homophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia. The first two are propagandistic for trying to validate sexual deviance. Homophobia defines opposition to what homosexuals do with their bodies as a baseless fear. Sigmund Freud chose this Greek word, meaning fear, to label groundless fears, which makes of homophobia a lie, because that's not true. Fear of homosexuality is perfectly reality-based. Everyone went crazy a few years back over COVID-19, killing 7 million people, versus the figure for AIDS deaths at 40 million. It's a disease nurtured by homosexual orgies for hundreds of nameless men, each at a time. Transgenderism is also a lie. It's what used to be called transvestism, which is as explicitly forbidden in Torah as sodomy and related perversions, and no less Islamophobia, which propagates the delusion that there's some kind of equivalence between Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, which is just ridiculous. Jewish university students these days are physically afraid. Are Muslim students on campus likewise physically afraid? I don't think so. And given the history of Muslim behavior since the 1960s, they are the world champion terrorists for skyjacking planes, planting bombs on them to explode in midair, or to be flown into skyscrapers. The only people in the world entitled to suffer from a baseless fear of Islam are those who have been living in a coma for the last half century, and have been unaware of the news that never lacks for stories of Muslims committing the random murder of masses of anonymous people just last week in Moscow, what happened October 7th. Yet that is still going on 5 months later, with the United Nations Security Council yet to condemn what Muslims did on that day. Were I a lawyer representing the council when charged by pro-Israelites for this dereliction of duty, I might defend the council by saying, you know, what the Muslims did to over 1,000 mostly young Jewish adults was a real-life nightmare. dreamt up by the most sadistic, satanic, raving Muslim maniacs one could imagine, whose deeds were out of this world in the matter of humanity. And the council just doesn't want to think about what Muslims did on that day, those devils. We all know of those who have seen the IDF compilation video, 47 minutes long. Many people who have seen it do not stay the 47 minutes because the scenes are the handiwork of physically human people but on fire with an inhuman drive for unimaginable cruelty and evil inflicted on total strangers just because they are Jews living in their homeland that they brought back to life, dispossessing no other people from their homeland. The historical record is clear. This country was, in the words of 19th century American novelist Herman Melville, he called it a caked, depopulated hell. Never met a Palestinian in his time here. Zionists stole nothing from any ancient Palestinians, and unfortunately, because their offspring, their great-grandchildren today, are clueless when it comes to the phenomenon of anti-Semitism, today's Israelis don't know how to deal with the enemy, the Muslims in Gaza, and miss the target by arguing rationally and factually at the United Nations. For example, Israel all too readily acceded, I think, to the demand by anti-Jew governments, including the U.S., that Israel's first priority must be the welfare of the innocent civilians in Gaza now suffering thanks to the IDF. These 5 months, so many displaced innocent civilians are starving. Bernie Sanders said they're starving. The UN General Secretary also said they're starving. Samantha Power said they're starving, to which Israel has responded by extolling its concern for the welfare of the civilians in Gaza in the matter of food and other supplies, flowing to the refugees when not stolen by Hamas thugs. Israel responds by extolling its efforts on behalf of the needy, without realizing the sub rosa anti-Semitism in play, which Israel unwittingly aids and abets by taking seriously these requests or demands that we look out for these people. It does not see, the humiliation of being told it's our responsibility for the welfare of this community that voted in an honest election, Hamas to be their government. What I had hoped to hear from the Israeli government when ordered to provide for the welfare of these innocent civilians displaced by IDF operations would be that Israel would provide the same quantity of humanitarian supplies that the U.S. delivered to German civilians in 1945, same amount, and that the government of Israel awaits eagerly for the U.S. Air Force, bombing Germany in that year, U.S. Army Air Corps, to supply Israel with the records of all the humanitarian assistance the U.S. and the U.K. provided to German civilians during World War II. Israel will provide the same amount to the civilians in Gaza. The demand that we look after the humanitarian needs of the Muslims in the Strip, who have never in 17 years elected a better and different government than Hamas, are responsible for Hamas. The Gazans never once criticized the Jew hatred in UNRWA schools that their children received. What Israel might say is that it has no objection to others looking after the humanitarian needs of these people, but count us out. We don't owe these people a damn thing. And when Israel extols its concern and efforts in order to combat the anti-Jew lies, it does not understand that Jew haters who think this way are immune to facts and reason. They are not moved to speak as they do based on facts. Their hostility is coming from another place. Their mobs shriek genocide when they clearly have no understanding of the word. It's not a synonym for massacre. What the anti-Jews like Obama's choice for UN Ambassador Samantha Power did was corrupt the term by writing a book on 9 genocides when none of them were genocides, except for her writing on the Holocaust. The top story in Israel today, of course, has been the Security Council resolution that Obama likely told Biden not to veto, which is exactly what Obama did in his last December in office. A resolution at that point, in essence, condemning Israel's presence in Judea and Samaria as a criminal occupation of land that Israel took from the Jordanians in 1967 with no license to do that. With help from official Israel, by the way, that has never since then staked a righteous claim to this real estate, as it helps the enemy by agreeing to send humanitarian supplies to the Muslims from Gaza, Israel does. Instead, Israel has the right to tell the 56 Muslim states and the 21 simultaneously Arab states to take care of their own. And that was pianist David Gurwitz. Yeah, what moves Israel's critics is never fact-based and rational. And so often it manifests as just plain ugly and obnoxious behavior. Take, for example, last week's performance by British Foreign Secretary David Cameron, who threatened to no longer sell weapons to Israel unless it allows the Red Cross, its personnel, to visit the Nukba psychopaths captured by the IDF. He also threatened to support a continent-wide European embargo on arms sales to Israel. The UK has been in the forefront of the drive to force Israel to allow visits by the Red Cross to those Muslim butchers and rapists now in captivity. How kind and concerned for their welfare are the British? Cameron said Israel is violating international law and must allow the Red Cross to visit them. By implication, Israel is guilty of a crime of mistreating these men. This is pathetic. Of all the humanitarian causes in the world, Cameron chooses to give aid and comfort to the Muslims who on October 7 did what they did to over 1,000 Jews. He's concerned about them. What Cameron, in his hostility to the Jewish people, refuses to see is that these men are not POWs entitled to all the rights and stipulations in the Geneva Convention for soldiers captured in battle. No, these men are not soldiers. They're evil, sadistic, lunatic, Jew-hating sex maniacs, rapists and murderers who chop off babies' heads. This is not the behavior of a soldier in battle, but a monster who does not deserve to live, let alone receive succor from the anti-Semitic International Red Cross. And speaking of the British, maybe you saw the item today of two survivors, Israeli survivors of these Islamic Nazi devils, who flew into Manchester, England to talk to audiences there of their ordeal, only they had to spend 2 hours in the airport being browbeaten and insulted by the border police. Quote, knock the attitude off where we've made the decision that you're coming in, so just let us do the checks we need to do and keep quiet. Look at me, are you clear with that? Good. We're the bosses, not you, close quote. These two have been diagnosed, of course, with PTSD. I also reason that David Cameron's threat to bully Israel by getting all the EU countries to gang up on the 7 million Jews surrounded by 550 million, mostly Muslims whose religion is a form of hatred, Jew hatred, I think this stems, on his part, in large part, by fear of Islam. It may be a symptom of what Bat-Yor calls dimitude, learning to bow to Muslims who threaten you. Cameron surely knows, as we all do who follow the news, that central London these days, on Saturday nights rather, it no longer belongs to the British. It belongs to mobs of Jew-hating Muslims. In this regard, Cameron's British are like the French these days. The French are losing their country very rapidly to a community of over a billion worldwide for whom Jew hatred is the fuel of their faith, with a similar arsenal of hatred for Christians. Has David Cameron no shame in playing advocate for the human monsters of October 7? Likewise, the French, their president, Emmanuel Macron, ironically like David Cameron, another anti-Jew with a Hebrew-Jewish first name, Macron said 2 days ago that the forcible transfer of Gazans from Rafah ahead of an IDF operation would constitute a war crime. This is a statement fit for Lewis Carroll. Israel gives warning of a future operation in order to allow the noncombatants to remove themselves from the area, move themselves from harm's way, which Macron says is a war crime. Is Israel supposed to have them remain where they are in homes and become collateral damage? Already in November, Macron complained that, quote, civilians are being bombed. These babies, these women, these old people are being bombed and killed, so there is no reason for it and no legitimacy. So do we plead with Israel to stop. Thus spake Emmanuel Macron, speaking like a glatt kosher anti-Semite for lying that the Jews are murdering babies, murdering women, or old people. They're bombing and killing them, he said. In other words, just as Hamas on October 7th chopped off Jewish babies' heads, so the IDF is accused of bombing babies. Like Cameron, Macron is living in an occupied country. France was occupied in 1940 by the Nazis. Today it is again occupied by Muslims, whose deeds not even the Nazis were known for. So that was the essence of the UN resolution this week, which Obama's stooge did not veto. The call for a ceasefire is more verbal dishonesty because the motivation is not for a ceasefire, but to prevent Israel from winning. It's an old story in this 76-year-old state. The Jews will always be prevented from winning. The anti-Jew, which is much of officialdom around the world these days, and certainly in the UN, the anti-Jew never wants Israel to win and take possession of all the land from the river to the sea, which is still only 53% of the promised land. For this might confirm that the Jews really are the chosen people, and their conception of God is a true one. This Security Council resolution has already been applauded by Hamas because it suits their unyielding desire for Israel not only to stop attacking them and going after Hamas terrorists, but to retreat altogether from the Strip with no freeing of the hostages. Their demands for 5 months have remained the same. They demand total victory. And why, I reason, they have never been serious about wanting any kind of hostage exchange is that their ultimate purpose is not the freeing of fellow terrorists in Israeli prisons. Their goal in building these tunnels was to use them as they do now, places to rape and torture and torment Jews. What their ultimate goal is really, we'll propose after some more music.
אף על פי ואף על פי שהתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו.
And that was Mickey Rosenbaum doing the penultimate of Maimonides' 13 Principles of Faith, I Believe in the Coming of the Messiah. And you're listening to the program on PhantomNation.com. This morning here in Israel, the Prime Minister's office put out a statement saying that the Hamas position is not interested in a prisoner swap agreement. Exactly what I said before the music. Quote, "The Hamas position proves clearly that Hamas is not interested in continuing the negotiations for a deal and constitutes saddening evidence of the damage done by the Security Council's resolution. Hamas has once again rejected every U.S. compromise and has returned to its extremist demands. An immediate end to the war by the IDF, a demand for complete withdrawal from the Strip, and Hamas wants to remain in power so that they can again repeat the October 7 massacre over and over again, as they have promised to do." Israel said the Prime Minister's statement will not cave to Hamas's outrageous demands and will continue operating to achieve all of the goals of the war: the release of all hostages, the destruction of Hamas's military and governing ability, and ensuring that Gaza will never again threaten Israel. I agree with his judgment that, quote, Hamas is not interested in continuing negotiations for a deal, close quote. But I disagree that they believe Israel will withdraw with no hostages, letting Hamas repeat October 7 again and again. What I think Sinwar wants is for Israel to invade, to even kill him and his cohorts. But in the operation, so many non-combatant Muslims will be killed, Israel will emerge soaking wet with their blood. Israel will be seen as no better than the Nazis and be humiliated before the world for that, so they will no longer be able to emotionally blackmail the world with the Holocaust. They will be guilty before the whole world as committing genocide, just like Nazis, and lose their status as victims of anti-Semitism. Hatred of the Jews will become worldwide, and Muslims will be seen as representing the authentic religion of Ibrahim. Israel, in any case, needs to stop trying to placate anti-Jews with claims of its concern for the welfare of the innocent Palestinians. Life will go on if official Israel rejects the lie that emerged practically the first day of the IDF operation, is that there are innocent civilians whom Hamas does not represent, which is utter nonsense. IDF soldiers penetrating every home of these enemies have come across, in just about all of them, weapons, ammunition, copies of Mein Kampf, not to mention the thousands of unarmed Gazans who followed the actual monsters into Israel on October 7th to loot, and probably have fun desecrating Jewish corpses. Israel's PR could benefit from a reboot and a full-blown counterattack, not just against Hamas. Yesterday, I watched the otherwise very good spokesman of the IDF, Rear Admiral Haggai, emphasize how the IDF targets only Hamas and civilians, not at all. "We are good boys and girls," he seemed to be saying. This might be rephrased as, "We target Hamas, and if others are accidentally harmed, he must say the blood of the dead and the wounded is on Hamas, not Israel." Indeed, Israel might learn from Robert Kennedy Jr., now trying to be the Democratic nominee, whose father was assassinated by a Muslim. His father was the opposite of his grandfather, the Nazi lover, Joe Kennedy. RFK, the senator at the time in 68, was murdered because he led the pro-Israel faction in the Senate. Indeed, as a 23-year-old, Bobby was here in Israel in 1948 reporting on the war for the no longer extant Boston Post, and his coverage was 100% in favor of the new Israelis. His son, the other day, Junior, said that Hamas was to blame for firing thousands of missiles into Israeli cities like Tel Aviv. He said any other nation that was adjacent to a neighboring nation that was bombing it with rockets, sending commandos over to murder its citizens, pledging itself to murder every person in that nation and annihilate it, would go and level it with aerial bombardment. But Israel, he said, is a moral nation, so it didn't do that, close quote. Instead, he said, it built Iron Dome, so it would not have to go into Gaza, close quote. To which I say I agree and disagree. I agree that Israel would be right to flatten Gaza but I question its restraint as the moral thing to do. If Israel had years ago claimed sovereignty, sovereign ownership, and worked to evict all the freeloaders and UNRWA personnel because the strip is legally ours, this might have prevented all the operations since 2007, prevented all the tens of thousands of rockets fired at us over the years. The moral thing to do was to declare the strip rightfully Israeli turf, and Israel had the right to expel hostile enemies within its borders. What for sure is not moral is the report that a week ago, last Friday, a Muslim who opened fire in the Benjamin region on a minibus, wounding four Jews, a couple of them seriously. He was then killed after a five-hour chase. This character had served time in an Israeli prison for terror crimes, but was released and became a high officer in the PA. Why was he released? He was part of the Shalit deal, I think. Last week as well, in Shifa Hospital in Gaza, the IDF arrested one of the Hamas planners of the murder of the three yeshiva boys in 2014 in Gush Etzion. This character had been a prisoner for terrorism in 2011 when he went free in the Gilad Shalit exchange. If this character had been executed or expelled before 2011, he would not have been deported to Gaza as he was. Israel needs a major reboot on the practice of keeping terrorists in prison at all. Imagine there were no prisoners. There'd be nothing for Hamas to demand.
הדרת פנים ואזכה שתזדכך חוכמתי בשלוש עשרה מידות שהתורה נדרשת בהן ועל ידי זה יזדכך כל רינתי אכבד את השם מהוני ומגרוני מהונך, מהונך כבד השם מהונך אל תקרא מהונך אלא מגרונך מגרונך, מגרונך כבד השם מגרונך, 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 כבד השם מגרונך. כל רינתי ואכבד את השם מהוני ומגרוני מהונך השם מהונך, אל תקרא מהונך, אלא מגרונך, 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 כבד השם מגרונך, 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 כבד השם מגרונך.
And that was Yosef Karduner doing words of his master, his Rebbe, Rabbi Nachman of Breslev. Okay, that's it for this weekly freebie podcast. For those who want three podcasts a week, please subscribe at phantom-nation.com. And if you're still subscribed after a year, the subscription becomes free. You might also want to check out what others have called the best book ever on the war against Israel. Some have called it a literary masterpiece. Phantom Nation, Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace. Until next week, I'm Shimon Tekoa.